Welcome to the podcast. It's the best podcast in the world.
This is going to end up on the show. I know it, motherfucker. What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 93 of Epitome of Stupidity, your favorite allegedly metal podcast. And in the intro today is a band that I have fallen completely in love with in just the past 6 or 7 months, a band called Foxjaw. That's P-H-O-X-J-A-W. And that is their song Apples off the newest album called Not Very Nice Cream, which is all one word. I think the easiest way to describe them is that they are what happens when you throw a bunch of very different influences together in the same pot and somehow something fucking pretty delicious comes out. But we'll talk more about them and with them shortly. For now, I'm going to say if you're new here, I'm Clint. I'll be your host. If you're not new here, you know that the podcast has once again partnered with Sonic Temple here in Columbus. And the first of 3 sets of weekend passes has been won by Chase, and some awesome monster weirdness art courtesy of Steve Shanks is going to Chris. Congrats to both, and info on the next giveaway of weekend passes will be coming soon. Keep an eye on the social media stuff for that one. Until then, how about you play the Sonic Temple commercial, Clint? Kiss my ass, Clint. You can't tell me what to fucking do.
Sonic Temple Art and Music Festival returns to historic Crew Stadium. Slipknot, Disturbed, Pantera, the original Misfits, Evanescence, Limp Bizkit, Judas Priest, Stain, Breaking Benjamin, A Day to Remember, Falling in Reverse, Sleep Token, Rise Against, 311, Seether, Mudvayne, and many more. May 16th through the 19th, Columbus, Ohio. Tickets on sale now at SonicTempleFestival.com.
I said it before and I'll say it again, that is going to be 4 days of fucking fun right there. As to what I've been listening to since we last talked, obviously lots and lots of Foxjaw because A, they're awesome, and B, I've been getting ready for this show. Solid run of some Queens of the Stone Age and some Mastodon in there as well, because why fucking not? I ended up in a weird, for me at least, metalcore-ish run of some stuff. I listened to a lot of Half Me and 156 Silence, both of whom are highly recommended if you're into that type of stuff. Again, I'm not typically metalcore guy, but those guys get it fucking done. And then I'll round out this segment with a mention of the St. Pierre Snake Invasion's new album, Galore, which I've mentioned here before, and if I have to think about what to listen to for more than 2 seconds, I just turn that album on because it tickles me where I itch every time. And some of their older stuff is also fucking great as well. And there may be more about them in a future episode. So stay tuned for that. Outside of all that, this is where I talk to you about your drinking habits. So let's be better drinkers, huh? Instead of being Joe Schmo, average crappy light beer drinker, you don't want to be that person. So what do? You drink like a damn Viking. That's what you do. You go to BrimminghornMeadery.com, pick out some literally award-winning mead, and then at checkout, enter code EPITOMEAD, E-P-I-T-O-M-E-A-D, and boom. 10% off your delicious. And then once you've received this stuff and drank it and you're feeling pretty good about yourself, I hope for some drunk messages saying thank you so much for pointing me toward this and getting me a discount, to which I will say you're fucking welcome. Anywho, let's talk some Foxjaw, yeah? Quick notes about the band here. Since 2016, they've released 2 EPs, which are Goodbye Dinosaur and A Playground for Sad Adults, as well as 2 albums, being Royal Swan and Not Very Nice Cream, again, which is all one word, and it came out just last year in 2023. It's also where our intro and outro song, Apples, is from. Royal Swan is probably still my favorite and was the jumping off point for me. It does so much so well, but everything they've put out is well past the good mark and bordered into fucking great. The EPs are raw and heavy and just fucking awesome. Royal Swan feels like them kind of getting their legs under them and figuring out who they are, where Not Very Nice Cream continues to exemplify that this is a band without fucking boundaries who can do basically whatever they want and it's going to sound great. But instead of me just sitting here talking about them, maybe I do that thing where I make fake phone sounds and we talk to Danny of the band. Yeah? Beep, 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 boop. Ring. All right. He answered on the line with me is Danny, right? We're going with Danny?
That's right, yeah.
Danny of Foxjaw. Danny, how the hell are you today?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Just got a beer, so I knew you were having a beer. So
yeah.
It would make sense for us to have one together.
Right? Damn right. My guy Danny here's got, I saw the big-ass Foster's can when he took a drink of it.
Yes, it's not my beer of choice normally, but it's a leftovers from a party on Friday. Yeah, so it'll finish all nice and cold.
That's all that matters. I like to start these conversations off with just a big generic. What have you been listening to here lately?
I've been listening to a lot of Swans again.
Swans, yeah?
I went to Poland recently. I was in Gdansk, and I saw Swans play for the first time. I've been meaning to see them for years. And that was just unbelievable.
Yeah?
Really was. So, listening to them, listening to Oxbow, but mainly when I'm making a new record at the moment, which is, it's not a Foxtrot record, it's my own record, away from the guys, and that's been taking up a lot of my listening time. When I'm making a record, I sort of live inside of it. I listen to it almost like crazily, like I analyze it, listen to it, go back chains, and so I've been sort of living inside that record, and until that's done, and then it'll be gone, and then I don't listen to it that much at all. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah. Let's talk about that real quick before we get into Foxjaw stuff. What are you doing on your own?
So basically, I'm still working out what I'm doing with it, but it's very progressive. It's so fresh and new that I've only got a few handful of people I know that are playing on it. I don't even know where I'm recording it. Do you know what I mean? I've got a producer who I've always wanted to work with as well, and I think it's cool because me and Josh, in working with Josh and Foxjaw, is I'm so used to doing it. This is a different thing now. This guy's like, he's very spaceman free. You know, you're like psychedelic, kind of Brian Jonestown kind of style of production.
Oh, really?
Kind of stuff. So it's cool to hear sort of my kind of sound in a different soundscape now.
Loads
of synthesizers on this. It's hard for me to gauge what it is, because it's still actually forming. I actually only wrote like the first few bits of lyrics like a couple of weeks ago, so it's very, very new. But yeah, that's gonna be exciting.
Yeah, that is exciting. I obviously didn't see that one coming. That's awesome. I look forward to hearing it.
Yeah. Yeah, because we've got a third Foxtrot record mostly written that we recorded. Well, we were demoing it mainly in an old windmill in Ottendorf, which is in the north of Germany.
Okay.
It's not far from the Danish border. When we did our tour there in October a couple of years ago, we stopped there to work on the third. And third record is special. It's very, very cool. But for now, we're not doing that. We're all taking some time away from it to do our own little things. When the time is right, we will be back to do it, you know?
I can't fucking tell you how much I can't wait to hear some new Foxjaw. You guys,
it's crazy. Like there's this one tune on it. It's just like, it's mad. It's some crazy riffs, and I think it's heavier again, but also kind of lighter again. I don't really know how to describe it. It's cool.
That's what makes you guys so fucking fun. Is that I don't know how to describe so many of your damn songs. Like some of them, like a lot of things on Not Very Nice Cream, almost. Like when you first hear them, almost come off kind of popish, but then if you listen just a little bit more intently, you realize that there's some weird and heavy shit going on right fucking there in front of you, and it's almost like disguised. It's so fucking clever. What kind of comparisons do you guys get, and do you get tired of them?
You know what? I none of them tire me at all, because I love hearing what people take from it. Like, you get some people who will say something, you think, what?
Right.
You know what I mean? But then every now and again, like, I get a Mike Patton thing quite a lot, especially from like our live shows and the way that I perform live, which I'm always like, oh, that's nice. I like that. Do you know what I mean? Because the seeing Foxtrot live is another entity in itself as well.
I believe it.
The record's obviously very theatrical, our live show. It's very much very performance based. And it's very loud, but there's a lot going on stage. You've got a wall of amps at the back. It's powerful. But we all listen to individually a very different music, like really quite different. But then there are a few little links where we do kind of line up, and we're like, I think with the second album, we wanted to go a little bit more silly with the production. We, from the time when we started making that record, and the bones of that album, the first couple of songs that were written for it was Serpents and Apples. And they were written over Zoom.
Oh, wow.
Like, on Zoom, because we weren't able to get together. So we were Zooming each other, and the computer would be, like, freezing. And then Josh would ring me, and we'd be like, oh, wait a minute, that bit. And I'm literally on a bongo, going, like, drums, do these drum beats. He's going, what are you saying? I'm going, like, can you do that? And I'm like, yeah, the mouth over the video. And that's how it started. And then we ended up recording it in Bude in Cornwall, which is a really beautiful place. And what was really cool about, not a lot of people know about this record, is that when we made the record, a guy called Dark Cloud King, and he originally was going to, like, set up these kind of, like, because he's a First Nation Native American from Canada.
Okay.
He's got a really interesting story. Can watch, like, I think there's, like, some documentaries about him on YouTube. But he
what
came
was his
down,
name again?
It's called Dark Cloud.
Okay, sorry to interrupt you.
That's all right. He came down, like, during for a bit of the recording. And that was just an interesting vibe, having, like, a First Nation there with us.
Sure.
Very spiritual man. And his friend Marco Polo is a really interesting guy. He lives in Nepal now.
Okay.
So it was a really, really hard record to make. And at the time, when we were, like, releasing the album as well, that's when things got really hard and bad with all the crap that was thrown at us, and
sure.
Some just really unfair, and we had to deal with cancel culture whilst releasing the album, and then dealing with legal things, and it was a hard record to make, and then releasing it was not very nice either. So the title Not Very Nice Cream is the most fitting title for that album.
It's just kind of by
truly.
Accident.
Yeah, and I was really, like, it got to a point towards the end of that album where it was almost like I was throwing so many ideas into it that Josh was a bit like, we need to call it a day now, there's too much going on. And it was almost like we had to just go, right, that's done. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
But I am super, super proud of it, actually. And I just listened to Last Mackerel on Friday night, actually. I've not listened to that in a little while. I just love some of the...
It's so fucking good, and I'm glad you mentioned Serpents there. I'm borderline obsessed with that fucking song. It is so fucking nasty. It's
and it
kind of, like, to hear you talk through it there, especially knowing that it was one of the first things done where it feels like it's got, like, all the venom and vitriol that you probably had by the time you were done with it because of all the dumb shit that was going on. That song is just fucking gnarly.
Yeah.
And it, I don't know, it feels like something that, like, parts of it maybe could have been on some of those original EPs too. And I figure instead of me trying to talk through you guys' growth and progression, I want to find a way to have you kind of talk us through where the band started with the EPs and how just kind of raw and heavy those things are to where you are now with the experimentation and being able to do some of these clever, fun things while also still sounding like Foxjaw.
Yeah, I think me and Josh been together for a very long time. I used to go to parties with him when we were teenagers, and he was in a metal band back in the day, and then I was in a band called Black Elephant, which was like a more prog rock band. And we always just were really fans of each other, and the same goes for Alex. So I was always a fan of Alex's music. So we always wanted to do something, and both of our bands at that time had come to an end. And it was like, right, let's do some jamming. Because we had tried to jam before back in the day, and it was like, he was just playing very technical, like, you know, I mean, he's a very tight rhythm guitarist. So he's playing like, and I'm like droning bass notes. It was just like, it just didn't work. But when Fox just sort of come together, we started working together. And Dinosaur Bones, I think, was the first ever song we made, I think, if I'm correct.
Okay.
And we write songs a lot. I mean, like, we write for fun. And so there's so many songs that are unreleased. There's covers that are unreleased.
I would love to hear a fucking Foxhall cover.
Yeah, well, we did one for Metal Hammer, a Slipknot cover.
Oh, really?
Behind. And I love it because the first half of it is all done like proper kind of like really soft. It's like sung and it's like, so it's like hearing, because it's a really, really beautiful song, actually. The lyrics and the chorus, when you put it down in, and it's sung, like, it's a really, really catchy chorus. And so I'd really, these things will come out, you know what I mean? It's just, it's one of these things where there was a bunch of stuff that didn't make it because the label didn't feel it was right. Or there was something coming next that needed to be released, so it ended up getting held back. And there was something that was meant to come out at the end of last year, like two, like, old ballads, Foxhall doing like, almost two ballads.
Wow.
And they, like, one of them has some of the best lyrics that I think I've ever made. Like,
really?
I'm so proud of the lyrics in it. And the other one is a song called Holograms, which is, I mean, we made that song so long ago. I think we made it like during the first EP. It's still not come out. Do you know what I mean? So
wow,
it's crazy. There is actually a cover online at the moment that came out a week ago. Some app people don't. We haven't posted anything about it yet, so no one knows it's online. But it's a Sparks cover.
I'm writing it down.
That's, if you go on to the Hell Wizard is the label that. We're putting it out. They're doing an anniversary vinyl with a bunch of bands covering Sparks on it, and we're on there. But Pale Wizard are worth shouting out in this video because talking about the beginning of the band as well, Pale Wizard, they released our first ever vinyl, which was Victorian Dolls and Spin Club. They were limited to 250 of them. They're very, very rare, and they're honestly one of my favourite vinyls I've ever, like, to look at. It's like this beautiful red. It's like a ruby red, but it's got like a swirl in it. It's stunning. But I thought that was a really cool first release as well, because although Dinosaur Bones was the first song we ever made,
sure,
it didn't come out to the EP. The single came out first. So
right.
It was a weird timeline with Foxhall that everything's got to like find the right place, be on the right record. You know what I mean? Like we'd have a bunch of songs. There are songs on Royal Swan that didn't make that record that are still there. Like it's the right record. Because there's this kind of like 80s sounding thing that we've worked with for a while, which is a bunch of songs in that format, which I would like to do that kind of like more clinical record. And I think they'd all work together as a bundle. So those kind of songs have ended up kind of to the wayside. The third album is more like Punch You Again. It's
yeah.
More like a bit rock. You know what I mean? Yeah, like the next one. When it comes out, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? We all need time at the moment. We're all very, very hurt about the way we've been treated. Taking that kind of abuse, it does take a toll on people. Do you know what I mean? So
sure.
I think what's important is our families and being happy and when we're all ready, we will do it. But that door is most certainly closed.
Just to kind of note this real quick, the things that you're alluding to, we talked before we started recording here that you're planning on releasing a statement about and all that and just kind of flushing all these things. I just want to kind of make that known here in the conversation so that nobody's left curious or wondering where or what's next. Outside of that, I'm going to return back to the fun stuff here because who needs that shit?
Exactly. That's the reason we're all into this. I mean, that's what it's all about, the real world of music. And music should be people coming together and not this like very spiteful, try to bring people down culture that seems to be like rampant within the music industry. And then it's all the people that work in the industry that bow down to it because they're scared of it, that allow it to grow and become what it has. It's just unfair.
Yeah. I mean, there's enough shitty things in the fucking world. Why the hell are we trying to add to it?
Exactly. Music is an escape from a lot of darkness in our lives. And it gives us a lot of happiness and joy. And that's where it should remain. You know?
Fucking A. So, yeah, to pick up kind of on a thread that you loosely mentioned there in the and talking about you guys' evolution. Lyrically, sometimes it'll feel like a song is very serious, and it'll sound like the song's very serious, but then you throw out some random ass line about Crocodile Dundee or fucking polar bears or penguins or something fucking random and nonsensical.
Yeah.
You've got this knack for this fun, weird lyric in the middle of a song that feels serious that doesn't pull you out of the song. And, you know, like, how would you describe your lyric writing process? How does this happen?
Do you know what? I think a huge influence on that would be someone like Syd Barrett. I'm a huge Syd Barrett fan. I just like the goofiness sometimes within a song. And I think sometimes if you go too dark and too serious, and I think there is a time and a place for that kind of thing. Like I was telling you about that song that was supposed to come out, the A and B side, two singles. They're very much a lot more to that. They're like, there's a time and a place for that. Like, I don't think those kind of more goofy moments would work in some of those songs, because they're more like the structure of it's a bit more serious. But I think that sometimes when we're being serious as well, I think we like to almost be a bit tongue in cheek with it. And like, did he just say that? Like,
right.
And, but also, it's kind of like painting, using words, and like trying to take you somewhere within the music's making you feel something, and the lyrics are making you visualize something that's kind of a bit different and a bit obscene sometimes. And I think that's just the way. And sometimes it works. Sometimes it is like I listen back and I go, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's I just don't want anything to sound a bit. I just want it to sound different, mainly.
Yeah, You for sure nail that, and I would have never thought of the Syd Barrett thing. That's I can see that now that you've mentioned it though.
So you got I've got a bike, you can ride it if you like. It's got a basket, a bell, and things to make it look
right.
Good. I'll give it to you if I could, but I borrowed it. You know, that kind of like, I just love that.
Yeah,
love that kind of song.
It's almost like it's almost like a goofy conversation with a friend or something. It's. And like I said, the way you pull it off without, you know, like for me, if I think about a goofy lyric or something, my mind automatically goes to like Primus or something. But the seamless way that you pull that off and it doesn't pull out of the song, like I said, the Syd Barrett thing makes a lot of sense now that you said it out loud.
We got sent through from our booking agent at the time, just before COVID, Primus tour. They were doing a tribute to Farewell.
Yeah, the Rush thing.
And it was like sent over to us. We were like, you guys interested in this? Because we're pitching it. And I was like, oh my God. Like, for one, it's Primus. And secondly, they're doing Farewell Kings, which is one of my favorite Rush albums. So I was like, Jesus. And then obviously COVID happened. I don't remember what happened, but it didn't happen. That was another thing. We were in such a spot for COVID, and it really slowed the engine down. And it really did a lot of damage to everyone, I know, but it definitely did a lot for us as well, sure. You know?
Yeah.
It was frustrating.
I fucking believe it. Just to kind of wrap things up with the lyrics, are there themes or topics lyrically? And if so, what are they?
Sometimes I'm thinking about something, but I don't always want to be like, I don't want it to be obvious what I'm singing about. I want people to take their own connotations
sure.
from it. Like, and I love that when people come and say, oh, this, are you singing about this? And I'm like, not really, but I like how you're taking that from it. But yeah, there's a lot of like post-apocalyptic sort of stuff in it as well. I do kind of like you hear that in kind of Serpents, I believe. And is it Last Mackerel very much about that?
Yeah, I'm going to like fucking fanboy here for a second. But the way Not Very Nice Cream ends, where you go through Last Mackerel and then you hit those last two songs, The Last Man Called John and Serpents. And it's just... Oh man, it is so fucking great. And you know, you mentioned the Slipknot thing, and I'd never really put it together before, but there's that part toward the end of Serpents where musically it starts going nuts and the drummer's hammering away at that fucking snare, and I can kind of hear the Slipknot influence there.
Yeah, he's a real hard hitter, Kieran.
Oh man.
He's like, when we're sound checking, it's like when he hits the snare, it's like every time, it's like you can't help it, like your head like moves. It's done a number on my hearing.
I fucking believe it.
It hits hard, and you can hear it when in the tape, because it really is played that hard. He really smashes it.
It sounds like he is just fucking beating that thing like it took something from him.
He's a big lad. He's a big boy. He's like a big cuddly bear. He's like the softest guy in the band. He's such a sweetheart. But he's this huge animal when he gets on drums. It's crazy.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So we've talked about lyrics and everything, and you know, you as a singer, I'm sure you spend a lot of time talking about vocals and lyrics and these types of things. I play the bass. I know you play the bass. You want to take a second and talk about playing the fucking bass?
Yeah, sure, man. I on the subject of the bass, I did sell an amp because I went to India at the end of last year. I had a really bad year at the end of last year. I lost one of my best mates. We had to move house, and it got really. And I ended up being like, from point of view, I got to go and visit my mate in India. I have to get out of the country and just get away. And I ended up selling an amp to go away, which I do regret, but at the same time I had an amazing time and I needed to do it. But I had a trainer which I used on a lot of the Fox Shore stuff, and they're really cool, those old 1970s trainers.
Right.
But I use, to be honest, I'm not like mad happy with the rig I've got at the moment. When I go back out of Fox Shore, I'm gonna invest in, I want to get some Gallien Kruger bass cabs, bass heads, really powerful ones. Main thing is having 500 watt minimum bass head transistor. It needs to be loud, and using huge cabinets. Because what we did on the last tour as well, the Not Very Nice Green Tour, is that I had two stereo bass rigs as well. So, and I ran the Moog with the bass synth through that as well. So and then obviously I use a Fender P. I use a Gibson Grabber in the studio a lot of the time.
Oh really?
It's a little bit too head heavy for me live. I have used it live, but the precision allows me to sort of dance as well and throw my stuff around. It's not like, it's kind of awkward. Unless you've got the grabber low, you do it a bit like Death from Above. I like playing my basses quite high. And obviously, because we're down in C, I play with a pick. And in my other band stuff I do, I go out and play like function stuff and all that as well. I play my fingers a lot. Yeah. I'm very much a finger bassist. But when I'm out with Fox Joe, it's you've got to dig in with the picks. It's so low tuning. Do you know what I mean?
And get at it with some precision, yeah.
Yeah, and I got some cool pedals as well. I have a custom pedal.
Oh really?
A producer called Matt Sampson, and he only made a few of these pedals. He made one for the guy, the guitarist in Turbo Wolf has one, I believe, and one of the guys in Twin Atlantic have one as well. But it's like one of these pedals where it's like, if you just turn it on, it's like a sub. I can't understand like what it does, because I cannot find another pedal that does it. That's why I'm like really scared it's going to get broken, because I can't just go and buy it again.
Right, can't replace it.
That is like, oh, you put that on and both those cabs will just, oof. You will feel it in your chest in the whole room. It's a really cool pedal.
I imagine you've got to have, you know, just kind of talking about the drummer there for a second, I imagine you've got to have a lot of ass-kicking equipment there to keep up with that guy sonically.
Exactly, and also getting the vocals over all of the sound was something that took a long time. Getting my voice to be powerful enough to, like, literally every show would be, I'd get off and we'd all be dripping with sweat, absolutely like burnt out. It is, the Fox Shore show is not an easy show. It's a workout. That's why, like, I work in the building game. Do you know what I mean? I'm a labourer. I'm on the shovel a lot, and it keeps me fit. I'm also in the boxing gym now, which is when I go back to touring again, I'm a lot fitter now than I've ever been. And that's, I think, important as well when we're doing stuff like what we're doing, because it takes a lot out of you every night doing it. So
I fucking believe it. I believe it. And I can't wait till things work out so that you can come tour the States. And I would.
Me too. Honestly, it's our dream. Like, I mean, I've only been to Florida when I was 2 years old. I've not been to America since. Me and my partner have been watching loads of American films recently, and just like, we're probably gonna go like soon anyway on a holiday, because like, I just gotta like, it's massive. There's so much there I want to see. Like, I really want to go to New Orleans and see all the jazz stuff. Like,
yeah,
I want to visit friends and all over. I've got friends all over in America as well. I want to go to Colorado, see the Rocky Mountains. That's what kind of interests me a lot, is I want to see like the little towns. We just finished watching Twin Peaks. I can't believe I've never watched Twin Peaks until now. And it's just like, you know, I mean, those little American towns with the diners, and you go in there, I just think, oh, I'd love to see that.
All right, well, should you ever find yourself in random-ass Columbus, Ohio, be sure to send a message. We'll sort something out.
Sure. I want to go everywhere in the world. I'm very much a traveler. I travel a lot. Like last year, me and my partner, we did Morocco, Croatia, Estonia.
Really?
Yeah, Estonia was really cool as well, because we went out into the forest and saw the Red Army barracks. It was really cool, because I'm really interested in World War II as well.
Okay.
I'm a bit of like a history traveler as well. I like seeing historical sites.
Nice.
Wait, what's Columbus, Ohio named for, though? Is that Ohio? That's where Slipknot are from, right?
Slipknot? No, Iowa.
Iowa.
That's a funny flip up, though.
Yeah. There's so many places, though. It's so massive. Isn't it?
Right. No, you're definitely.
How many England fit in flipping in America? Because you think, like, you look at the UK, the UK's Scotland, Ireland, Wales, and then England. So
sure.
England's not even that island. It's like a bit of the island. You can fit that about, like, how many times?
Right. Now, the funny thing here is that my ex-wife is from over there, which, like, sidebar tangent here, which is why I was twice as annoyed with myself where I couldn't figure out the damn time difference, because I dealt with it when her and I were dating for however fucking long. But
yeah.
we've had the conversations about, you know, how many England's fit in, like, fucking Texas. And it's
crazy.
It is a funny thing for sure.
It's crazy because, like, we all live in, like, and if you notice it, like, our houses are all, like, stuck together. We all live
right.
In, like, everyone's, like, and oh, it's so expensive here at the moment. We're going through, like, a real problem with, like money. It's what you get for what you can get over there. It's just, I don't know what it's like in the States now, but.
Everything's
got called Trevor. He's got, like, a ranch in, like, land, and I was just like, man, I was like. For what he's probably paid for that, I'll probably get like a tiny little house there, with a tiny little garden, into each other's gardens. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like I said, we've had those conversations, and it is the dichotomy of it all is fucking funny.
Do you want to hear a funny story?
Because every time
you're drinking out of a beer coaster thing that says Pelican on it, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I played in my first band a show with Pelican. Years and years ago, when they did the album with Upper Thermal on, What Comes to Need, what is the orange album?
Australasia or whatever it is?
It's not that one, that is or later one. But we opened up for them, and it was like we were just starting band as well, and it was a train wreck. It was like a sold out room full of people, and it was like abysmal. I think I threw a pedal across the stage. It was like, I'll never forget it. Like, but we just emailed them, and I was a huge fan of Pelican, still am, still love Pelican. And they just got back to us and said, do you want to come play with us? So it was like, for us at that time, it was like, whoa.
Right? That's fucking awesome.
Great riff. Like, what brilliant riff and band.
Yeah. I think I'm actually wearing a Pelican shirt, too.
They've got a lot of stuff on vinyl as well.
They are fucking great. I've seen some stuff where it looks like they're writing to put something out again here soon too. And I guess to kind of combine things here and get it back to Foxjaw, what's the writing process like for you guys? I know you mentioned that you've got most of the next record done. How does that work? Are you putting music down first? Do you have lyrics set up that you're trying to mold things into?
Lyrics is usually the last bit, and it's the bit that takes the longest. Like the music, that comes very quickly to us. Like me and Josh come out of a writing session, and I'll get to a studio at 7, and by 11 o'clock, I'll be driving home, and he'll be sending me a WeTransfer with a link to a song that's musically finished. And then it's a case of us adding to it, changing it, and then going and recording it. But one of the things we said about this third album when we were going to go to record it, obviously it's not happening for the time being, is that we did want to have more of a live angle at this one, because it's usually me and the drummer will go in and track all of that together. And then the guitars will go spend about a week on the guitars, passing guitars around. And even I'll play guitars on the Fox record, because all three of us play completely different. So it'd be like, can you play it like this? Alex plays it. You're too flashy with that bit. And then Josh will play it. And it'll be too like Josh Gallup's, like super tight.
Sure.
If it needed that like lazy Lou Reed feel, then I would do it. I mean, so none of us are precious about our parts. We also have a lot of musical friends around Bristol. That played on all of our records. Go-tos like Tom Haskin, who does the sax on our music. I've worked with him since Black Elephant, since my old band. He's always been a go-to for the sax. And we had Harrison Johnson on at the end of Serpents as well, playing, I couldn't even tell what the instrument is. It's like a string instrument. He's playing that with the sax. That's what the outro is. And then William Blair, he was on the first album, Bats Are Bleeding. He did the organ solo.
Nice. I had just a quick random thing here. I posted the song "Curse of the Button Man" or whatever the name of it is, in the podcast stories, saying something about talking to you guys, and somebody responded to the story directly, just getting all excited about Bats for Bleeding and how much they love that fucking song. I didn't mean to cut off your flow there. I just thought it was funny to kind of connect the two. Hopefully that guy hears this.
Yeah, and the thing is as well, it's like it's a bit like in Queen of the Stone Age where Lanigan would come up and sing and then you'd have someone else sing.
Sure.
And like we care about the music and the music foremost. If someone comes in the room and does it better than me, like that, like the lyrics and Bats for Bleeding, like I wrote the music with Josh, but the actual lyrics were written by Alex and he wrote them for me to sing. And then he started singing them. I think he sent me like a version of him singing them. And it was like, you're singing this, dude. Like he's got this like kind of Bowie-esque kind of style voice.
Sure.
And it just suited that vampire feel to what that song was like. It's a very like collaborative sort of thing, really. We all, mainly me and Josh, do most of the writing, although Alex has had a massive influence, especially on this third one. He wrote a bunch of stuff for it that's they're all demos at the moment, but he wrote a bunch of stuff that was really interesting that may make that third cut. And then Kieran's just that savage drummer that comes in and also adds his little flair. Actually, don't do that, guys. Play this drum bit. And then we've got Dan Elston, who did keys. He did live keys for us on some of the sessions, you'll see. He's an amazing drummer. So he's also just like a guy that comes into the studio when we're making a record and says, hey, try this. Like the end of Trophy is the boom, 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 that techno thing. That's sure. He played that in the last video. So it's just like a collaborative thing. And I think that's kind of what we wanted to do is that we were talking about doing a tour with a bigger band as well. We wrote this like soundtrack. It was like we were trying to make a 30-minute song at one point. But we sort of got midway through and we're like, let's just not even cook it. but we wanted to do like, I wanted to do a short film for that. And with that, I wanted it to be performed with a bigger band as well, like a big stage of bands.
Sure.
You know? So we just got the thing is there's so many creative like ideas and that's what it's all about for us. It's just making really like great albums that last and are authentic. And that's just what it's all about. That's what we care about. We don't care about being famous or anything like that. I don't care about any of that.
I feel like all that comes through. It's funny how you can listen to, or I guess I should speak for myself, but I feel like I can listen to bands like you guys or like Queens of the Stone Age or something like that, and you can tell that the music actually fucking matters. I want to put out the best song no matter what the hell it is we have to do to make this the best fucking song. And that really comes through, and the authentic thing is the perfect nomenclature for it there, in that, you know, this feels like it should. This song could not be any better than what it is because these guys obviously give a fuck about it and have done, you know, they've taken risks, but they've made sure that it's digestible too. I really enjoy all those types of things, and I love it when you can hear something and you can feel that the music fucking matters. It's not just trying to get to a hook to get people in.
Exactly. I think we just really love to experiment as well. Like we want to make something fresh and new, and that's really important to us. Is that, like, we listen back to it and go, well, that's really like interesting to listen to. Because there's a lot of bands out there that they stick to a formula.
Sure.
They get a formula. And don't get me wrong, there are some of those bands that they do that thing, and they do that thing well, and I enjoy those bands, you know?
Sure. Everybody's heard AC/DC songs.
Oh, man, I love AC/DC so much. My favorite is If You Want Blood. That song, like, you if you drink a beer and then just, like, air guitar around your listening to that, you're having a guitar. I got to see them with Malcolm still in the band as well, which I'm really thankful for. Yeah, I still rushed with Neil Peart as well. There are two things I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
And last year, the last festival we did together, I think, was Download, I think it might have been. And Kiss were playing that year. So that was a cool thing as well to tick off. We got to play the same festival as Kiss.
Right. Yeah. You started talking about taking risks and stuff when writing, and that's actually the first line of my next question here. You clearly take risks when writing these songs. Are there ever times where you've got something and you feel like it comes off too different or too weird and has to be changed? Or have there been instances where you've been worried about how one of these things might be received if it feels like it's pulled away from what Foxjaw is into something different?
Well, yeah, I think you're probably going to see a bit of that on my next record, because Josh kind of manages to wind me back in a bit. Josh is like always up for listening and trying this crazy idea and following it through. Whereas when I'm working with Michael now as well, he's a bit like that as well. I'm noticing he's kind of going a bit like, hang on a minute, like. But with Josh, it was kind of a case of like, all right, I'm going to listen to you, even though what you're saying is actually mental and doesn't work. I'm just like, just try it. And sometimes you'd be right and it would be like, this is terrible. But it's the fact that we had that boldness to just go down that road, and the worst case scenario, we can just click delete.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? So it was just literally just like, think of the craziest thing you could possibly do. Let's just do it and then see how it works. And sometimes it would be really cool and sometimes it wouldn't. But that's just in the lab, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, yeah. And kind of in relation to those things, at some point it feels like on every release, there's a song that has like a vibe that where it almost feels like it should be getting played in some fucking spooky carnival where the number of people that enter isn't the same as the number of people that leave. There's just like this fucking creepy ass carnival feel to some of these songs. Oh shit, I lost my place here. I had examples and everything.
That's
all right. So like Royal Swan a little bit, Curse of the Button Man's got it, Serpents definitely has it to a degree. There are things that it's some of it's the music, some of it's your cadence where it's just got that weird fucking scary circus feel. Is that like, do you guys know that that's happening? Is that on purpose? Is that
Yeah, I think I'd say what Alex got a big part to play in that. Alex is a bit like a vampire, really. He's like, he's awake all night. He seems to eat the sunlight. he has that kind of like sound. He's like really into those like modes or what are they called? The way he plays guitar is just like descending and like nee, 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 nee. Well, saying that though, I mean we did our first release song was Victorian Dolls, and you hear the riff and that
right.
And Alex wasn't even on the scene then, so yeah, I suppose it does come from all of us, really. Then
that's awesome.
I mean, we like that kind of, I like that kind of dark, horror-y sounding guitars, really.
Yeah, it certainly fucking comes through. It makes me really happy to know that you guys are aware of it, and it's not just me in perception. You've mentioned American movies and stuff, and you're obviously very British, and you'll be it actors or singers. It feels like it's really common for a British person, whether they're acting or singing, to lose their accent, where yours is fucking super clear and through there. Do you?
Yeah.
That's
the time that did.
I'm sorry?
That's the time that did. Because and you'll hear it a little bit in, I think, the Sparks covers. I did go a little bit back into sounding a little bit American. So,
yeah.
And I was very conscious of that. Especially on the albums, of being like, I want it to sound like me from Bristol. I want it to sound like me. Because especially in Black Elephant, my old band, I was like basically trying to be Josh Hole myself. It's one of the things, because they're good records and they're worth listening to, the Black Elephant ones, but I kind of ruin them, I feel. Like, it's just that.
Really?
It's just me trying to be, like, trying to do my best Josh Hole without, like, intending to.
Right.
I just listen to a lot of Queens of the Stone Age and you all learn. I mean, it's one of those things. And some, I don't know, don't bother me all the time with some bands, but I wanted it to feel like me authentically as much as it could do. And I think we got there in the end with Foxtrot, and it does feel like me now.
Sure. It's a very unique thing, and your vocal style and sounds, this is a stupid fucking thing to say, and I hear it now that I'm getting ready to say it, but it obviously works very well with what you guys are doing, be it the creepy fucking carnival sounding things or any of the other things that you guys somehow pull off, where there are clearly so many different influences and so many things going on, and it works in a way that it almost fucking shouldn't. I've found myself listening to you guys trying to isolate things and figure out where that sound or that influence could have came from, and it almost never pairs with what else is going on, but somehow you put them all together and it works fucking magnificently. Yeah. And I love it. Vocally,
it's a lot of time. Like, we spend so much time working on it as well. Like, we we listen to it all the day, all the time, all of us individually, and we come up with ideas in our own time and we try stuff. Now that I'm actually on the Mac producing my own stuff as well, I'm co-producing this with Mike, I'm learning so much about production. And
yeah.
So, well, the next record's going to be, because a lot of it sat on Josh as well, the next record is going to be so many more things that I can bring to the table as well that I'm learning. That's why I'm just so excited to when we get back together to do it. It's going to be great. And the thing is as well, is there's no rush to do it. It's got to be ready and right. Everything we want to do, we want it to be at a standard and we want it to be brilliant. So however long that takes us, that's how long it needs to be, you know?
Sure. Yeah. And I God knows I'm not going to argue with your fucking standards there, because as far as I'm concerned, you're killing it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Vocally, no, fucking thank you on that one. vocally, you know, there's the thing where it seems like a lot of great bands or bands in general, and I'm going to work my way around to asking you singer things here, where in the older stuff, I don't know if it's because somebody's more pissed or because they just haven't wore their fucking voice out yet. But like in the older things for you guys with the EPs, you're screaming and yelling a lot more. Whereas by the time you make it to Not Very Nice Cream, it feels like you've sorted your voice out and you use that stuff more for effect. Is that because you've just, is that intentional? I guess is what I want to ask.
Mm. Yeah, I feel like, especially going out and touring, it's like, you don't want to, it was a lot about screaming as much as you could. And I want to use my voice in the best way. And when it feels right, because also I like the singing side of it, and I can sing. I don't do as much proper singing as I would like to, but it just all comes down to the song and what serves the song. The song is what we serve at the end of the day.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like with a thing to note with Not Very Nice Cream as well, is that was written in lockdown. Do you know what I mean? So we weren't all together in that room. So when it came to playing that album, we'd not actually played those songs
together, right?
Do you know what I mean? So we it was hard, you know what I mean? And suddenly I'm playing like keys, like, and singing. Josh is playing keys and singing, and we've got all this stuff on stage. There's not as much room on the stage anymore, and it's like I had to put like colored stickers on it, because it's like I'll be going crazy with strobe lights, and I'll have to turn around and hit this note and then be back on my bass. And because I was like, oh, I want to be like Geddy Lee and playing Moog and a bass at the same time. And it was like, and we put it all over the record, and it was like, oh, now I've got to pull this off,
right?
It took a few shows to sort of start getting there, but come the end of that tour, we were just absolutely smashing it out, and we're better musicians for it.
So fuck,
just,
yeah.
Just giving myself a challenge every record and going, right, now you've got to play this guy. we almost like kick ourselves in the foot, but it makes us better.
Sure. It's, you know, you got to crank up the difficulty to make it right. I guess speaking of touring there, do you got any fun or crazy tour stories from the past couple?
Oh, we've got all sorts of stories. My favorite one still is we played a show with Zach Wilde.
Oh, really?
On a cruise in the middle of the Baltic Sea. So from Stockholm to Turku in Finland, and it was like iceberg looking things outside, and we just played. Candlemass came on after us as well, so we're on before Candlemass, and that was really cool because Jerry Castillo was on drums as well. So
okay,
he's like an animal. So I was too nervous to talk to him. I stood next to him, but he looked stressed out about his drums or something, and I was like, oh, I'm not going to talk to him. But that was crazy, because we had our own bunks full of beer. We had 5-star meals on a cruise, all paid for. It was like we lived with like Metallica or something, you know what I mean? And as a band that are used to turning up to a venue and getting a 4-pack of Foster, we don't get treated the best in England. You go to Europe, it's like, oh, wow, that's what it's like to be in a band back in the day on the tour, doing the tours and turning up and there's free beer and, you know. But I think the main thing is, I think going back into it as well, I think there was a lot of drinking on the tours. And I don't think, seeing as I'm at a point in my life now where I have took a step back really from drinking too much, because it ain't good for you. Do you know what I mean? If you're doing it every day, and
sure,
it ends up like exhausted coming into the tour. So I feel like coming back into it, I think it'd be a little bit more of an adult approach to going out and play it. You know what I mean? We've all got our families developing, and you know what I mean? And like, things are different, you know what I mean?
Absolutely, sure.
When we were a bunch of guys in our 20s on the road, it was great fun. We had some amazing, amazing memories, met some amazing people, played with some amazing bands. And do you know what I mean? That's what it's all about, you know what I mean?
Right, yep. The We'll start kind of steering this back into the or to toward the end here. I don't want to take up too much of your day. I know it's obviously later for you than it is for me. Let's do some spelling things here. We'll start with the easy thing here. Why the weird spelling for Foxjaw? And where did the name come? Period.
Well, to be honest, we were called Foxjaw with an F first, not for very long, and I can't remember whose idea it was. I think it was Josh said about the PH before, and I just the way it writes, Foxjaw, it's a word that doesn't exist, and it just sounds really cool. I just really like it.
It looks cool, and it's
very unique to us. Do you know what I mean? And I feel like that's what I like about it. It's not like a name that loads of people have.
Sure. You know what I mean?
It was unique, the branding of it.
Where'd it come from?
I don't know, really. We had a bunch of silly stories that we said. I think Josh said something about it was his nan had a wooden leg and it was called a wooden leg. Josh is very funny, man. He's a very funny guy.
I'm writing down Nana's wooden leg.
I need to come up with some more.
Yeah.
More and then lead people into the mystery.
What about the way everything is presented on Not Very Nice Cream, where everything's one word and no spaces and all lowercase? What was the idea behind that?
I think Josh's idea that was. I'm not too sure why. But I guess it was trying to do something a bit different again. We did get ripped for that in one of our online reviews. They were like, I love the record, but this is terrible. What have they done there? But then they proceeded to say how much it was their favorite album of the year. So I was like, oh, well, okay.
Take the good with the bad, I guess.
Yeah. He came into one of our shows. He's an Irish guy. He's a lovely guy. And yeah, he went crazy at that show. He's like, right, the front went absolutely nuts.
That's awesome. I'll do one more question here, and then we'll go into the goofy-ass way that I end these things. I feel like this is pertinent to you because of some of your experiences here. Any advice that you have received or would give to musicians? From musicians?
Just enjoy it while it's there as well, because life is unexpected. And the industry is... I'm not one that I have a lot of good things to say about, if I'm honest with you. So just be with your mates, enjoy making music together, and that's the most important thing. If you expect a career from music, it is really expecting a lot from it, because it's such a hard industry to get into. And even when you do make it, and I have friends in very successful bands who are still, they're not making a lot of money. So it's, you really do just have to enjoy what you do. And just go to shows, go and watch bands, get involved in it. You know what I mean? That's a big thing. Getting out there and playing. That's the most important thing, is playing as many shows as you can with your band and establishing your name and getting those followers behind you. And that's how you grow. You just got to get out there and do it.
Sure.
That
makes all the sense.
I started at the bottom. I started playing to a room full of, with nobody in. With our first couple of shows. At one of the gigs, the sound guy walked out and it's just us in the room. I walked off stage, I was just chatting to everyone while I was playing songs. Do you know what I mean? You do have to, if you want it, and you're a young band that want it, you do have to kind of start from the bottom and work your way up. And it takes a long time. But it is worth it. There's no feeling like getting on that stage and seeing thousands of people singing your songs back. And that is really something to be behold, I've got to say.
I fucking believe it. Hang on a second. I'm also writing down, played a show where the sound guy walks out.
Yeah, that was a rubbish show, let's put it that way.
This has been a lot of fun for me, very informative, from a guy who's doing a stupid ass fucking podcast, and also from a guy who's a legit big fan of you guys. So thank you for your time. This is not the part of the show where I told you would take us to the outro. This is me just saying this for the fun of it. So after all that, we're going to go into some of the dumbass things and for a laugh questions that I have here at the end. So this first one feels like it's a waste of time for both of us here, but I'm going to ask it anyways. with the rapid fire questions. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Really?
Even though I'm an English guy that drinks tea, and I do like tea as well. When I'm at work, it's just coffee in the morning. Just gets me there.
All right. Second one is, what's something you could eat for a week straight?
Oh, for a week straight. Tacos in Mexico.
Ain't gonna argue with that.
Yeah, they're just like, you can't get Mexican food anywhere, like, in Mexico, I feel. Like, when I was in Mexico, it's like, just different class. Do you know what I mean?
Sure. I would hope that they've got the best fucking tacos, right?
Yeah, you'd think so.
next one I've got here is Beatles or Stones?
Beatles.
All right. I'm more of a Stones guy myself, but whatever.
The thing is, I like them both, and don't get me wrong, I'm not like one of those like mad Beatles fans.
Sure.
You know what I mean? That's like absolutely obsessed with the Beatles. Like, some of it does bore me, actually. But some of it is brilliant, and what they've done for music is what it's all about. Like,
sure.
And stuff, you know?
Yeah, you can't argue what they've done for music. I certainly wouldn't waste any time there.
And when I like it, I love it as well. I mean, but then the Stones like got more of a, they're more rocky, aren't they? They're more rocky.
Sure, yeah. I like your phrasing there about the Beatles too, because that strikes a chord with me, where like I can go long stretches of time without listening to the Beatles, but when I like it, there's nothing else that satisfies that urge.
Mm. Yeah, I really like Day Tripper, and like I love that there's kind of like 60s kind of wrist thing.
Right.
Do you know what? If you had asked this question a little bit differently, because if you said Stones beat Beatles or Beach Boys, I would have been like Beach Boys.
Beach Boys, huh?
I'm a real big Beach Boys fan. I love surf stuff. I love Pet Sounds. I really do like the Beach Boys. I've got a real big thing for them. I love the vocals in it.
Nice.
That's another influence you can probably hear in Foxtrot, where we layer up vocals.
I would have never fucking thought about that, but again, now that you've said it, I can see what you're saying. Absolutely. Next question here is, what's the weirdest gift you've ever received?
Weirdest gift? I don't know. I mean, it's hard to gauge that. I really don't know. Because, I mean, I don't know. That's hard off the top of my head.
Okay. That's a new one for me. I just wanted to see if I could pull something stupid out of the ether there.
I'm sure there is. Off the top of my head. My missus has given me some interesting gifts. So, I don't know. We gave each other some gifts from traveling. I got like a really cool a genie lamp in from Morocco. Really cool. And it's filled. We went to the Sahara Desert and I filled it up with red sand. Sahara.
Nice.
I got a table in the marine full of artifacts, and it's got lights in it, and it lights up. Really cool.
That is cool.
Like in a museum sort of thing.
Okay, that was a where I was looking for something stupid and weird. You provided me with a mental image of something really fucking cool there. I like the idea of the lamp being filled with the sand. That's neat. I know you've mentioned trying to pull back on the drinking, but I'm still going to ask this next one. In beer or liquor?
Beer. Beer, big time.
Me too. If you could ask any animal one question, what would it be? And who would the animal be?
I'd ask my cat, Bram. And say, do you love me?
scale of 1 to 10.
You look at me and you slow blink at me. And then you do this head thing where you headbutt me, like in a bit of a loving way. But you always are very kind to me and over loving when you want food. So is it just about food or do you actually love me?
Cats are fucking hard to read.
Yeah, I'm a big cat person. We got 3 cats there. They're really special. I love them.
The next one I've got here is scale of 1 to 10. How good are you at keeping a secret?
I'm loyal in that way, but I put it this way. I had a surprise birthday for my missus, and I accidentally showed her the hot tub in a photo. So, do you know what I mean? I'm one of those people I probably would get a secret out by not my own doing, by being stupid.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? So I don't mean to, but I'm a little bit like naive, or what's the word, a little bit
absent-minded.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
What's the go-to karaoke song?
Well, it has changed over the years, but Runaway.
Okay. All right.
But who's that by? Del Shannon.
Del Shannon, yeah.
Del Shannon. So I got a love heart. I'm eating love hearts.
I see that.
I got it stuck in my throat then.
That's a that's a fun thing to be eating on Easter Sunday while you're talking to a dummy with a podcast.
Do you get love hearts in America?
I don't think so. They don't.
An English sweet.
They look like the Nesco candies that we have here, but they're not called love hearts.
I see. What about them? Fizzers?
Yeah, yeah. They're Smarties over here, but that's the same thing.
American candy and English candy is quite different.
It is. The chocolate thing with Cadbury is so fucking weird how, like, it's, you know what? That's a whole nother podcast. I'm not running down that fucking wormhole. The last stupid question I got here, speaking of food, is sausage links or patties?
Sausage leeks.
Links?
Links? What's that?
We're talking breakfast food here. So, like, the normal tube, I don't want to do any examples as that because it's all very penile. So a link would be more of a tube of sausage, whereas a patty is obviously a patty. And again, we're being specific to breakfast food here.
Well, have you ever had a Cumberland sausage?
I don't think so.
In England, you go to like a pub and you get like a sausage sandwich. Like, that's nice. Like, well, I do like a burger. Like, we had a burger today, actually. I do like that's why I do want to go to America and try the like burgers and stuff. Cool. I do like a burger.
Okay.
I'd say maybe a burger or a sausage. There's more going on. You got like a bit of onion in it, a bit of like salad, and then the
sure.
Like mustard, mayo, whatever the hell you got in it. It's more like, do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And then the actual last thing here is my very original. Nobody's ever thought of this question, let alone asked it previously. You, Danny, of Foxshaw, are stuck on an isolated island for the rest of your life. You get to take one album with you. What is that album?
It would be Dark Side of the Moon.
Nice. Quick.
Yeah, because the proof is in the pudding. It stayed in the charts for that long.
Sure.
Also, it's just like that would, like, in the isolated sort of like vibe of being there, where we just kind of like be able to listen to it and it'd probably chill me out sometimes, you know?
Sure. And then by the end of it, you get to go crazy with whoever it is that's going crazy.
Exactly. But I wouldn't say no to being on an island. That sounds great.
There are days where that certainly sounds fucking welcome. A lack of people is not a bad thing sometimes.
Yeah. Well, the weather is, hopefully the weather would be better there, because England, the weather is just atrocious.
What is the weather like there currently?
It's actually not too bad today, but it has been absolutely dire. It's been pouring down with rain for months. And it's like grey. It is the downfall of England. One of the downfalls of England is our weather. It's just depressing. It really is. And it makes for great music and comedy though, because we're so like, it's so like grabby outside that everyone's almost got to like make, like, do you know what I mean? We've got to make our own fun. Do you know what I mean? In the sense,
sure.
It's not like. So it's why, like, the it creates great music because we're all miserable.
Hang on a second. I got to write that down, too. I thought I was done taking notes. England. Because we're all miserable. That's fucking perfect. Okay, now this is where I'm going to say thank you, Danny, for talking with me today, and we're going to wind this into the end. What I've got written down here after my thanks to you is, this is something stupid that I've written days ago, and now I kind of don't want to fucking read out loud, but I'm going to do it anyways because I'm fucking stupid. As your favorite medical professional, I prescribe that you turn on any and all Foxshaw as loud as possible immediately after this podcast ends. Thanks as usual to our sponsors, Sonic Temple and Brimminghorn. As mentioned earlier in the show, the next Sonic Temple giveaway will be coming soon via social media. So stay tuned for that. Be sure to follow the podcast on all the social media outlets, as long as the social media outlets are Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, or X, or whatever the fuck it's called, as well as following Foxjaw on any and all of the social media outlets that Danny is going to tell us about right now.
Yep. Foxjaw, the social media outlets, where you find us on Instagram and on Apple Music, on Spotify, and all that kind of stuff, YouTube. And yeah, the song is Apples you want us to play, right?
Yeah, we're going to get to that here in just two more sentences. Please review the podcast on iTunes, give us stars or whatever it is on Spotify. And now Danny's going to tell us about the song after he takes a drink of Foster's.
Yeah. So this is Apples. This was arguably one of the favorites of the record. This is Apples by Foxjaw. Enjoy.